Grace, the Amy Santiago of Royal Bloggers.
And I'm Jessica, the Dorothy Sporanath of Royal Bloggers.
And we'd like to welcome you to On Air, the podcast where two cynical Brits discuss the latest royal news and the truth behind the stories. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the On Air podcast. We have decided to look at a very stressful news story for us all, and also go predominantly non-British to make a change, because I feel like we've done for a long time talking about British people, because this has been a story that's kind of been happening in the background for a couple of weeks, but it seemed to be at a point where the story is stabilizing. The story does not seem to be changing as quickly as it was. So we should be able to talk about it without being too out of date on the Thursday. So we have decided to go head to Norway to look at King Harald and his recent illness and hospitalization, and kind of look at what happened and how it was sort of covered, and compare it to other recent illnesses in this year of illness in royal families.
It really is the year of illness, isn't it?
I know, they're all ill all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, another one.
I know. Yeah, it hasn't been a very good start to the year for the royals. To kind of go back and remind people, just in case they haven't been following it or they've forgotten what happened in the early stages and how this all unfolded. The first news that we heard about Harald's illness this time around was on the 27th of February. So we had a story that King Harald had been admitted to hospital in Malaysia. He was there on holiday with the Queen, Queen Sonia. And it was said that it was due to an infection and that he was being treated by Malaysian and Norwegian medical staff. So on the 28th, the Norwegian press published a statement from the Sultana Malaha. Hospital where he was saying that his condition was stable and that he is receiving quality treatment from the medical professionals there. And then the royal household gave another statement saying that the king's personal doctor had traveled out to Malaysia, that the king was doing well, that he will be staying in hospital for a few days, and that no decisions had been made about, you know, how he'll come back to Norway, when he'll come back to Norway, but they are working with the Norwegian embassy over in Malaysia. And it also said that the rest of the family would continue with work as planned. And on the same day, Crown Prince Haakon was out with Crown Princess Mette Marit, his wife, for an event. And he kind of gave a little statement to the press, spoke to the press for a few minutes, where he said that he'd spoken to the king and queen, that the king seemed to be in good spirits, and pretty much largely reiterated what had been said in the press statement.
Then on the 29th, there was another update from the palace that said he was still improving and undergoing treatment, and that the aim was for the king and queen to return to Norway via a plane organised and flown by the Norwegian armed forces within a few days. And then the following day, on the 1st of March, it was a very similar statement that said he's still improving. He's likely to remain in hospital for a few more days of treatment and to rest, and then he'll be heading home via the plane that had been organised by the Norwegian embassy and armed forces.
Then we had another update on the 2nd of March, saying that this was quite a departure, because we'd had a few days of sort of, everything's exactly the same as it was before. And then on the 2nd of March, we had this update that the king had had a temporary pacemaker installed. Is that the correct word? Implanted. He's not a robot, so yes, implanted. He had a temporary pacemaker implanted because of a low heart rate that his doctors had detected, that he is well, and they said that the trip back would likely be in the next few days. And then later that same day, there was a second statement that said, oh no, actually, he's going to be leaving imminently, any minute now, and that when he gets back to Norway, he's going to be admitted to the Rikshospitalet, the hospital in Norway, and would be on sick leave for 2 weeks. And during that time, the Crown Prince Haakon would act as sort of regent, so would step in and do the job for him. The 3rd of March, there was a statement that was released from the palace saying that he had arrived back, that his health was improving, and that he would be staying in hospital for a few days.
On the 4th of March, the palace released another statement. Harald had an infection and a low heart rate, The infection is more under control, but he will require a permanent pacemaker, which will be implanted once Harold is free from infection, which was likely to be in a few days. He is stable and improving. And then during that day, we saw there were pictures of Meta Marit and Ingrid Alexandra arriving at the hospital to visit him. And we know that Hakon also visited him and Martha Louise also visited him that same day, but I don't think we saw pictures of those. And then on the 5th, we didn't get an official update, but we did hear from Hakon, who was out and about doing work. And he kind of said that Harold was really happy to be back in Norway. He was really glad that, you know, his mum and dad were back. Everyone was really grateful for the work they did. And he answered a question about whether or not the king should have travelled in the first place. And he was like, oh, I shouldn't really say anything about that. It's their decision. But we'll kind of look at it in the future and address what's happened and whether we should make changes.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a few interesting parts in that one that will come up later. So like he refused to answer what kind of infection the king had. And he said that they had done the visit to Malaysia with on medical advice, like they'd had medical advice beforehand, but that they would review it in the future. We did have some more visits as well to the hospital.
And then on the 6th of March, we got another statement from the palace that said Harold was steadily improving, the infection was under control, and the pacemaker was likely to be implanted early next week. And on the same day, a statement was released from Harold and Sonia that essentially was thanking everyone in Norway for their care and support, thanking everyone in Malaysia and the staff at the hospital for looking after Harold, and thanking the Norwegian government and armed forces for getting him back to Norway safely.
So yeah, so that was the statement on the 6th. And then on the 7th, I believe Sonia visited the king again. We had some photographs of that, but we haven't had any more statements since then. So we're recording on the 10th of March. I do expect there will probably be some statements in the next few days because we're anticipating that that's when he's going to get his pacemaker, according to their statement on the 6th. But as of the 10th of March, we haven't had any statements since that statement on the 6th. So let's look at the reaction to it, shall we? The most interesting bit is always where we get into the completely normal and sensible way that people always react to news like this. The important thing for this one is that most royal watchers are not from Norway. I haven't done the statistics, but I think that's probably accurate. And most probably access their information about royals from either the English language media or, to a lesser extent, perhaps the Spanish language sites like Hola. It's easy for people to sometimes assume that because they haven't seen any articles about this in the English language media or the Spanish language media, or haven't seen a lot of articles, that that means that there aren't articles to see. But obviously, if you go to like the Norwegian press, this has been the big, massive talking point ever since the 27th of February. I mean, they did have some of the stations had rolling news coverage of this. From the beginning, there was, they sent reporters out to Malaysia, even though I don't know why, because they're not going to see the king while they're over in Malaysia. So I don't know, the things that you would expect to see in the press over here, they also did in Norway. One of the interesting things about this was that the flight home was the most watched flight in the world. So there are flight trackers online, and his flight home was the most watched flight in the world at the time. You know, just to sort of emphasize the fact that there has been this like massive level of interest. It hasn't all been 100% positive.
I mean, from my point of view, I heard this, I was like, not again. there was a little bit of panic, like, oh no, what's going to happen? But it was never, because I wasn't seeing it in the press every day, it wasn't any kind of, it was no more of a worry than it normally is when Harold gets ill. I was just kind of like, oh, he's got another bug. He'll be fine. And then it wasn't until I looked at the Norwegian press and I was like, oh, this was a huge story. Like, when they announced Charles had cancer, like, it was a special BBC breaking news bulletin at 6 o'clock. Everyone get down, watch TV, that kind of thing. And in my head, I was like, well, if it was a big deal, that's what they would have done in Norway. But they kind of did, I didn't see that because I don't live in Norway.
Yeah. Even in the Daily Mail or the Sun or wherever, they probably would have said the King of Norway is not very well. But they won't have had all of the other conversations that have been happening in the Norwegian press. So I think it's very easy for people to think, oh, well, the Norwegians must have said nothing but positive things about what's going about Harold. It must have been nothing but love and affection for Harold, because all I've seen is an article saying that he's not very well. I haven't seen any of the drama, so therefore the drama does not exist. But in actuality, there have been a lot of really interesting conversations that have been taking place in the press around Harold's illness. I think the big one really has been, why was he in Malaysia?
Yeah, should he have travelled in the first place?
So he's 87, and actually he was not very well early, already this year, and you know this happened at the end of February, so within the first 2 months he'd already had to take time off for sick leave.
Yeah, and I mean, Harold was, like you said, he was off sick the 31st of January to the 2nd of February with a respiratory infection. And as someone who's had a fair few respiratory infections in their life, they tend not to clear up in 3 days. Like, I'm sure he had recovered to enough of a point where he was not on sick leave anymore, because you can do things when you've got a chest infection. Like, you're not always bed bound for the whole thing, but they linger, I think, afterwards. And I mean, that conversation with Harold on, not with Harold, with Hakon on the 5th of March was really interesting, because he was like, he was point blank asked, should your father have gone to Malaysia, should he have traveled at all, he was like, well, I think that is a decision that is always going to be up to my, my parents, and I shouldn't go into this much because it's not my story. But the assessment was made with a doctor, with Harold's personal physician probably. So I there it sounds like the assumption, from that, I can only assume that there was enough of a worry that before going on a holiday, Harold thought, I better check this. Can I fly? So whether that's because he was still ill, whether that's because he was like, oh, I was ill at the start of this month, I want to double check, whether it was because someone was like, if you're coughing again, can you catch checks? You've not got another infection. Whatever it was, somewhere in this system, someone thought, he's going to need to double check he's safe to fly.
And I think there would have been less issues if he had been going on a holiday and had got an infection while he was in Spain or somewhere close by that he could easily travel back from. But it was just the fact that he was on the other side of the world that immediately sort of people were like, I don't know if he even should have been going, because we knew that he was on holiday, but the press had not confirmed where he was either. So like people weren't made aware of this, weren't able to prepare for it. It was just suddenly like the king's ill and he also is in Malaysia, by the way. So it was a lot for people to take in, I think. It's been really interesting because the tone has been kind of like, or what I've seen in the press anyway, it's not been anger. It's been more kind of like, it reminds me of like when your friend goes back to their ex and you're like, this is not a good idea, but at the end of the day, it's your life and you should do it. So it kind of feels like it's, I don't think people are angry at Harold for going to Malaysia, but they're sort of like, this is really not a good idea, and you probably shouldn't do this in the future. And, you know, ultimately, my concern is just because I love you and I care about you, but I think you've made the wrong decision. So it's, you know, I wouldn't say people are angry at him in Norway. It's just that, you know, this has been a big topic of conversation. And I think, in particular, because the flight home on the plane cost £150,000.
That's nearly a house, guys.
So I think it's understandable that people would kind of be like, well, if he had been sick in Spain, it would have cost less money. If he had been sick in Norway, it wouldn't have cost that much money at all. You know, to some people, they might be like, but Harold's really sick. We can't be talking about the cost and the money and all that. But, you know, it is an important conversation point and it is something that the Norwegian press have been discussing. But then, of course, there's been like criticism of the people who are criticizing the costs. And so it's been kind of going in circles of like some people being like, no, this is a valid thing for us to discuss, the fact that it costs so much money because King Harold made a choice to go over to Malaysia. And should he be allowed to make those free choices when it, the repercussions to us are that we have a sick head of state and we spent £150,000 on a plane. And then there are other people being like, no, it's not appropriate. Harold is allowed to do whatever he wants. And of course, we're going to get our head of state back, but and no matter what the cost is. So there's been all this bickering. That's probably why Hakon was sent out to just be like, okay, we recognize that this is being discussed. We'll think about it in the future and kind of get everyone to be quiet.
Yeah, like the part where he's like, yeah, we'll do an internal evaluation, because it's like they don't have to tell anyone the results of that. That's internal. It's just a private little gossip. But it was like, yes, we acknowledge the fact that this went wrong and it possibly should not have happened the way it did, and we'll definitely look at it and we'll do a proper evaluation just privately. So, which I like to imagine is just going to be like Hakon sitting down with Harold in the room being like, stop going abroad.
This is the line, and you cannot go any further than this line on holiday.
Take your map with you and be like, no, sorry, can't cross that line.
Can't cross that line. Yeah.
I think it was really interesting for me because when Queen Elizabeth stopped travelling abroad, I was just like, why? Because you're old and you have... I was like, I get the fact she's old, but I was like, but you have the best medical care in the world. I was like, I didn't quite make the connection, apart from the fact it's a lot of energy to travel. But sort of seeing it in a situation where an elderly monarch has still travelled abroad and then has got sick, it's kind of been like, oh, that's why. Because, you know, you don't want to get... I mean, no one wants to get ill abroad because you then still have to get home from being abroad. It doesn't matter where you are or how great the facilities are or the medical care. At some point, you then still need to get back home. And that's significantly worse if you happen to be the head of state of an entire country. And have everyone sort of watching, you know. And I don't think, you know, it would have been particularly good for Norwegian-Malaysian relations if Harold had died in Malaysia. Like, not that it was Malaysia's fault, you know, but I think there would definitely, you don't want your head of state to die in someone else's country. That just seems like a bad PR, really.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's going to be something they'll put on the tourist posters, is it? The other kind of talking point I've seen, funnily enough, is that this situation has highlighted the lack of working royals in Norway. So one journalist I saw referred to it as staffing problems, quote unquote, which is so interesting to me because people act like this: the UK is the only country in the world where anything like that ever happens. But you've got Harold, who's obviously ill and is ill quite often and takes time off. You've got Mette Marit, who is the crown princess, who has a chronic health condition. And so sometimes she's able to work, sometimes she isn't. Ingrid Alexandra is still young and is in military training, so probably isn't going to be doing any work for another few years. So at the moment, a lot of it falls on Crown Prince Haakon. And obviously Norway's like, I think it's less than 6 million people. So compared to the UK, which is almost 70 million people, there doesn't need to be as many working royals in Norway as there needs to be in the UK. But it's interesting to even see the Norwegian press kind of say, we're looking pretty thin on the ground, having just one reliable, consistent, working age royal.
Yeah, and I think particularly in Norway, it's not going to get better in like the immediate foreseeable future, but also it's likely to get worse more quickly, just because Harald and Sonja are older. Like, they're both in their 80s, and Mette Marit is ill. So there is a chance that within 10 years, they'll be down to two working royals in total. Because, you know, it's entirely possible that Ingrid Alexandra won't have children in the next 10 years. She might wait in year till she's in her early 30s to have children or not have children at all, in which case they will be incredibly thin on the ground.
Yeah, people are marrying later. So it's possible that she won't have like a spouse to support her with her work. And, you know, lots of royals nowadays kind of don't really start working properly. They do the occasional engagements, and Ingrid does do the occasional thing, but they don't really start properly working until they're sort of in their mid-20s at the earliest, once they've kind of done university and all that kind of stuff. So we're looking at a little while before Ingrid is sort of a full-time working royal, and, you know, she probably won't be, well, I don't know, but she might not be married at 25, so she might not have that spouse to support her. Mette Marit's health condition might not be as good. Martha Louise very publicly was kind of, all her patronages were removed and she's no longer a working royal because of the choices that she made. And I can't imagine that anybody would really want that situation to change. And it might be easy to think, well, Norway's so much smaller, so it can survive with just a smaller number of people. But even so, it's used to having like four people who are working actively. And at the moment, we've kind of got one. And that is quite a drastic change.
Because I've always definitely been under the assumption, you know, I was like, well, you know, if we look at the countries that have monarchies in Europe, the population of Britain is drastically bigger than all the others, like compared to the population of Monaco or, you know, Belgium.
I think the next closest to us is like still 20 million smaller or something.
Yeah. So in my head, I was like, yeah, of course it makes sense that there are more in Britain. And obviously Britain also has the Commonwealth realms, like the 14 other countries they're also the heads of state of. And I think it's only like the Netherlands that also have another proper place which they rule over, and Denmark and Greenland, I suppose.
But they're right next door, so it doesn't really count.
Yeah, just the next one, just not travelling. So in my head, I was like, oh yeah, it makes perfect sense that like Britain's got 14 working royals, we're saying that's slim, and Spain's got two, and we're like, that's fine. But actually thinking about it, a lot of monarchies within sort of the last 10 years have massively dropped in the numbers of working royals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think they were dropping for a good reason, because people were going, oh, we don't need like cousins of cousins to be working royals. But now everyone's kind of grown up another 10 years and people have left or died or become ill. And you've ended up in a situation where a lot of the countries are now much lower than they had ever been before. And they're like, we can't add people back in, so to speak, once you've cut them off. You can't be like, change of plan, can you please come back and help us out? And you have to wait for another generation to be born and age up into it, which takes a lot of time.
Having been in the royal fandom and what being a royal watcher with a blog for 10 years, and kind of I was there lurking for a couple of years before that, it's so cyclical, royal watching. And I kind of came in when everyone was having babies, sort of 5 to 10 years after the big wedding peak had ended. There was a big wedding peak from sort of the mid-2000s to the early 2010s. And then it became the baby peak and everyone was having babies forever. And now we're at the part of the cycle where a lot of royals are turning 18 and are becoming adults. And that's great. That's lovely. That's really exciting. But nobody's having babies. Nobody's getting married. Nobody's sort of at the age where they're becoming full-time working royals, because they're sort of in their mid to late 20s. So we and a lot of people are reaching the end of their life, or are abdicating, or are stepping back in some way. And so I feel like this is probably an issue that comes up every cycle, where they're like, oh, there's not that many people anymore. But in previous generations, they would have been able to rely on like the cousins and the siblings and all those other people. But nowadays, with so much like focus on streamlining royals and cost effectiveness and not wanting to spend too much money, I feel like everyone was like, okay, well, we're going to just cut off half the family, and that'll be really great in the moment. And then 5 years later, they suddenly realize, oh, we don't have anyone to replace these people, we actually do need them. And it's only really an issue for like 5 to 10 years. It will resolve itself once the royals start getting to the age where they are working royals, once they start getting married and having spouses coming in, and it will resolve itself. But even though monarchies tend to think in sort of years and generations, the general public think about like what's happening right now. And so all we see right now is there's an issue and it's not going to be fixed immediately. So I think it's part of like just how royals are, you know, they are a family. They are based on passing from one generation to the next. And the natural cycle of a generation is that there will come a time where for 5 or 10 years, you know, you're in that limbo phase, and we're currently just right in the middle of it.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a really weird time to be in. And I think particularly because it's been so long since the last generation of royals turned 18. Mm-hmm. And even before that, if you think, you know, if you look at the current sort of old royals, so your Harold, your Charles's, your Carl Gustaf's, your Margaret's, they all turned 18 and got straight to work. And then when you go to your Felipe's, your Victoria's, your Williams, they turned 18 and had like a slower introduction to work. They often did another job before, or kind of did other bits of work. They were still working as royals, but it was a lot slower paced. Whereas now, like you said earlier, the 18-year-olds tend to be like, they are not going to do any work for 5 years, because they're going to go and do something first.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. I think the way the royals have grown up, they thought, oh, this was good for me, I'll make it better for my children. Things adapt and change. But when people are thinking about it, we're still kind of back in the mindset of the almost like the 1940s, mm-hmm. when all these royals were turning 18 and just going straight into work. So we're like, in our heads, we're going, well, there are all these 18-year-old royals, and or, you know, 16-year-old, 17-year-old royals. Some of them are never going to be working royals because of the way the sort of family structures have changed. And even the ones who are who are 18, we're going to be waiting another 7, 8, 10 years before they start to actually do working engagements. At which point you then need to age everyone else up another 10 years. So you end up, you know, with people like Harold in 10 years would be 97. You know, William in 10 years is going to be in his 50s. God. You know, Felipe is going to be in his 60s. Like, they're going to be a lot older. So it's suddenly you have got this new bunch, but then we're pushing everyone up again. And it makes, like you said, the issue of there not being very many working royals will end naturally. But I think it will end, it will always be a bigger gap than it used to be because people are having children later.
Yeah, no, I think that's really it, really. Is it's that there's been such a massive societal shift since the last set of monarchs, Elizabeth, Margrethe, Beatrix, Juan Carlos, those sorts of royals, that generation and before. Often, not always, there are exceptions, but often they were getting married and having children in their 20s. And so, yeah, it's just, it's a, I think, again, in the future, royals will probably adapt to this. They'll understand that most royals don't start having babies until they're in their 30s or getting married and having their spouse be able to work until they're in their 30s. And so the systems will adapt themselves and they'll be able to cope with that. It's just the fact that this is the, this generation that's currently coming into the throne are the first generation that were the ones who were having kids at that later stage. I think I found it interesting that, like, so much of the focus is on the fact that the Brits are having this conversation about working and slimlining the royals and how they don't have any royals working and how much of a crisis it is. But we're not the only country that is having this reckoning and having this conversation. Like, clearly it's happening in Norway as well. And I just thought that was interesting that, like, we're not going through it alone. It's just that we're going through it a lot more publicly. Yeah, so I haven't noticed any other sort of big talking points, really. But I think it's just interesting that, like, I mean, well, I was actually debating this with myself, and I was like, would the British press talk, if this was exactly the same situation in the UK, how would the British press handle the fact that it was £150,000 to fly Charles back from wherever he was on holiday? You know, is the conversation in Norway substantially different from how the conversation would be in other countries if the exact same thing was happening?
No, I think it would be really similar. I think the difference is the amount of coverage it gets everywhere else in the world, because like you said, the not what's happened in Norway, this kind of coverage has been sort of isolated to Norway. Everyone else has just gone, oh, Harold's sick, how poorly, you know, how much better they're doing it than everyone else's.
Yeah,
whereas in Norway they're having these discussions, whereas I think if it was in Britain, and to a lesser extent maybe Denmark and Spain or Monaco, the headlines would be coming from around the world. So even though I think the actual British conversation about it would be very similar, you'll have people saying, well, he's ill, stop judging him. You'd have people being like, we have to get back to Britain. You'll have lots of people being like, oh, it's a waste of taxpayer money. You'd get also get lots of people who aren't in Britain saying, you know, just putting their own 2 pence in without any reason to.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. I mean, that actually quite nicely leads on to the next section. I love when that happens.
I'm so good at this.
I'm so good at this, yeah. 93 episodes and we're finally nailing the segue. But the next section we're going to talk about really is the comparison to the Brits. And I think I'm always wary of doing this because I know that a lot of people are like, oh, the British royals get all the attention and they're not the best royal family. And I agree with that to a degree. I think they get way too much attention, good and bad, compared to a lot of other royal families who do bad things and get away with it or do great things and don't get enough praise for it. But I actually think this is a very valid comparison in this particular situation because it's about health crises, and both countries have had monarchs who are currently in the midst of a significant health crisis, which has generated a lot of attention. So I actually think these are very natural comparisons to make. And the big talking point, I think, has been about the difference between how Harold's health issues have been communicated and how Charles's health issues have been communicated and how those two situations have been handled by the respective sort of households and staff around them. So, I mean, what do you think? I'll just put you on the spot.
Yeah. Well, I kind of broke it down into steps, into sort of sections, and was like, well, what's different between them? So I looked at kind of the announcement of what was ill with Harold and what Harold was ill with and what Charles was ill with. Mm-hmm. I looked at the details of the treatment being released. I looked at how regular statements were. I looked at comments from the ill person themselves. I looked at the family comments. In that, I think the actual difference comes, it's only really in that kind of regularity of the statements from the Norwegian palace, because for, I think it was almost a week, they had daily statements being released. But in every other category, they are either identical or I'd say Britain has done slightly more.
I agree with you. I was hoping we'd disagree with each other, Grace.
Sorry, next time I just throw something else out there.
if you look at articles in the English press or English language press and the British press, the general view seems to be, look at Norway and look at King Harald and how incredibly transparent he is about everything and how closed off Charles has been. And I think that that is overly simplistic because I th yes, there are differences between the approaches. Obviously, I'm not, I'm contrarian, but I'm not an idiot. But I think that both Charles and Harold have chosen to keep some things back and have sh chosen to share some things. So, for example, Harold didn't share with us what the infection he had was. It could be any infection. We have no idea. And when asked point blank, both Crown Prince Haakon and the court have refused to say what the infection was. They also didn't tell us how the infection was treated. So they told us that the infection was being treated and that it was under control, but they didn't go into detail about this is the specific antibiotic regimen that he's on. It's not accurate to say that like there's this culture where the Norwegians share everything. They still hold things back. I think you're right. The main difference is the way the information is being shared, not actual information that is being shared. And it's this fact, the fact that the Norwegians do this kind of daily update. And I think it's really interesting because I think it's a very deliberate thing in Norway to do this daily update because there were some situations where, like, for example, they said on the 29th of February, so he got sick on the 27th, that's when we found out. And then on the 29th, they said they were in discussion with the government and the Air Force about how to get him home. I have no doubt that they started discussing that on either the 27th or the 28th, but they waited until the 29th to tell us. And they didn't have like a, we're bringing him. It wasn't, they didn't wait because that was when they found out the information. I think they waited because they like deliberately sort of pull things out so that they can have a daily update. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. It was like they could have said, or maybe on the 28th, he's receiving treatment for an, which he did say, for an infection and will return home. And they said there's no decision on when to return, but there's going to be a few days in hospital. And then immediately, like you said, the next day, they suddenly announced who was flying him in, the how he was getting home. And then they were like, oh, he's going to rest for a few days and then go home. And it was the same story on 3 days, but slightly rephrased.
What I think is really interesting is that every and I'm doing it as well, but everybody is saying they gave us daily updates. They didn't actually give us daily updates. An update is a change in the situation. As far as I'm concerned, that's what it would mean to me, is like a change positively or negatively in the situation. But there were a couple of examples where they gave us literally an exact iteration of what they'd said the day earlier. So they just said he's still in hospital, he's still doing all right. We still don't know how he's getting home. And that was the message for like 2 or 3 days in a row. There's this attitude that like, oh, well, the Norwegians are telling us so much all the time. It's like, but they aren't always. A lot of the time they're telling you something that they probably did already know a few days earlier, but they're strategically waiting to tell you, or they're telling you exactly what they told you yesterday. And there is a temptation, I think, from people to be like, oh, we should do that over here. We should have that daily update system over here. But I just don't think it's going to work. I think there's a reason that they haven't given daily updates on Charles's situation. Firstly, cancer's long term. It could be daily updates for the next year, which is ridiculous. But also, I look, maybe I'm wrong, and we probably won't ever know, but people in the UK just like to complain about things. And there are some people who are like, oh, this is a lack of transparency and look at Norway and how great they're doing things. I guarantee you, if Buckingham Palace were giving daily updates and those updates included statements that said there hasn't been a change since yesterday, you would get people who were saying, oh, I'm sick of constantly hearing about Charles's health all the time. Can't he just shut up about it? His statement today just told us exactly the same thing as his statement yesterday. It was useless. Like, we talked about this in the episode where we talked about Charles's health. Philip died, and there were actual people who launched formal complaints, not just complaining on the internet, but went and lodged a formal complaint with the regulator about how much coverage there was because it was more than 5 minutes. He died, and that was too much for them. So I think that the idea, people might be saying like, oh, I would love it if we had this system like the Norwegians have where they have the daily updates. But I genuinely think that it would be fine for like 4 days and then people will get sick of it and they wouldn't want it anymore. And so I think culturally, and I think part because of Charles's diagnosis being a cancer diagnosis, It just the system they've got in Norway for this just would not work here.
All I could think was if the British press, British court had done the same thing, British court, Buckingham Palace had done the same thing as the Norwegian court, I almost feel like that's where we would have ended up with that, with a republic, because we would have got so fed up of it. I mean, even when the Queen died, they were cutting back on their coverage rather than doing the daily coverage they did because people were complaining. And there were actually changes happening every single day for that sort of week period until her funeral, because they were moving her body, the royals coming in, there were other royals coming in, there was a queue. And they were like, oh, no, we better put on Antiques Roadshow or the public are going to go mad. But yeah, and the concept of BBC News, like every day at 6 o'clock, be like, so, today's update, the king is doing well, would just be insane. And also, quite right, I think after a point, people would be like, there's other news. There are other news to talk about rather than whether or not a man is still doing exactly the same as he did yesterday.
So I think there's just this attitude that, you know, we can pick up something that works in Norway and transplant it over here directly. And wouldn't it be great if we did it exactly like them? And I'm not trying to say the Norwegian approach is bad because it clearly works for Norway. And I just am saying that I don't think it would work over here. And I think that people are deliberately kind of ignoring that and ignoring what British people are actually like. I think that you've also seen the difficulty that happens with daily updates, and I think the very valid reasons why the British Royals might not adopt them. So a lot of the time when you are following along with these news stories, you don't necessarily remember what they said exactly the day before or 2 days before, or you're sort of just focused on like, okay, well, I've got an update today, so I know what he's like today, and that's great. But because we've done this episode in this way, I was able to look back at the day-by-day updates and see what they actually said, like all in one. Kind of like the difference between watching a TV show every week and binge watching it, you know. You see different things depending on how you engage with it. And so being able to see it day by day, what you saw is that the difficulty with daily updates is that you back yourself into a corner. So if you actually look back at Harald's statements, there was a time where they told us that he would be back in Norway, quote, in a few days. And they told us that for 3 days straight. The exact same thing. And in a few days is really like 3 days. So that can't have been accurate. You know, that they those statements don't make sense when you compare them to each other. On the 2nd of March, they told us that he'd be back in a few days. And then hours later, they told us, oh no, actually, he's coming back now. So they changed that on the same day. They told us on the 3rd that he'd be in hospital for a few days, but then on the 4th they said, actually, no, he won't be getting his, he'll be in until after the weekend. And so until the 10th, the 11th, sorry, at the earliest. And then on the 6th they said that the procedure for the pacemaker isn't happening until the 11th at the earliest. So he'll obviously be in hospital for a little bit longer than that. So originally they told us he'd probably be out by like the 6th, and now we're looking at like he probably won't be out until the earliest, like the 12th. They told us on the 2nd of March that he will be on leave for 2 weeks from work. So by the 16th, he should be back. But looking at this timeline, it's unlikely that he'll even be out of hospital in the 12th until the 12th-ish, and he will have just had a pacemaker and a major surgery. So they might then have to do a statement where they say, "Oh no, actually, we're extending his leave." So if you look at it, there's actually like three or four times where they have had to change their story because what they told us became inaccurate very, very quickly. And I think, you know, maybe culturally in Norway they don't mind, and that's, you know, they would rather know what's going on in the moment, and be told something day every day, and it doesn't matter if it changed. But I think over here, especially the press, you know, people would complain that, you know, every 5 seconds they're getting a different story and it's changing every day. And so I think that that would be a bigger issue. I think it actually potentially may even confuse people more, which is the very opposite of what you want with transparency.
It's back to that kind of concept which we spoke about when we did way long time ago, when we did our episode on Victoria and Daniel and the comments they made after the kind of rumors about their marriage, and they were like, yeah, it's not true. It's like, if any time they now don't release a statement, you are assuming that they're now possibly hiding something because they were releasing statements when literally nothing was happening. So the fact we haven't had a statement in 4 days, I mean, I could, I mean, I'm not going to, but you could extrapolate from that that actually Harold's deathly ill in hospital and they don't want to lie to people by saying he's doing well, but they also don't want to worry people. You could extrapolate that he's gone on the run and they're not sure where he is. You know, I could do anything because I technically expect updates and I would then expect the same updates anytime he gets ill in the future. It's always the thing I say with celebrities. I'm like, don't address rumors because once you address one, you then have to address all of them.
Yeah, I think it's clearly a difference in what transparency means to the particular countries, because I have not seen anybody have an issue with the daily updates in Norway, and I think their attitude is transparency means we're going to tell you what we know, whether it's confirmed or not, whether it'll change tomorrow or not, whether it's different from what we told you yesterday or not, we're going to tell you what the situation is now. Whereas I think over here, the attitude is transparency is essentially we're going to tell you things, but we're going to tell you them once they're confirmed, or we're going to tell you them once if there's a significant change from the previous update. And that does mean that sometimes something might come out slightly later, or that there might have been discussions going on that they didn't tell you about, but you still do find out the actual information. It just is delivered in a slightly different way. And I genuinely do think that any British person who tells you that the Norwegian approach of doing daily updates where you change your story four times in 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks, would work here, I think anyone telling you that is a barefaced liar, in my opinion. And again, that doesn't mean that it's wrong in Norway and I'm criticizing it. It clearly works over there, but I just don't think it would work over here. So all the people asking for it, I just don't understand why.
We've literally seen examples in the British royal family of stories changing and the press being like, clearly they're just lying about everything they've ever said. I know that Harry and Meghan have told different versions of their sort of first date. And I also know that they might view different things as their first date. Like maybe one of them is the first meeting and one of them's viewing it as, I don't know, their first actual going out together. But since they've both called it a first date and they're both different, the press have gone, right, they're lying, they're hiding information from us, therefore everything they've ever said about the relationship is a lie.
Definitely, yeah. The one thing that I do think that the Brits should do, they won't, because as things stand at the moment, it would be an absolute disaster, and I will explain that, but that I think is a good idea generally, is to rope the family into your response, your PR approach. So in the UK, it tends to be everything comes from the palace, whereas I think in Norway, they use every member of the family as an asset.
In Britain, since Charles's sort of diagnosis was announced, we've kind of had three-ish statements in quotation marks from family members. One of them was Harry, who was doing it in the Invictus Games, and he was like, yeah, I was so worried about my dad, so I had to go and visit him. Then was Camilla, who said, yeah, he's doing well. And then there was Edward, who said, yeah, he's doing well. You know, they've not said any more than that. They've not used it as an example to be like an opportunity to pass on sort of minor updates like, oh, he's doing really well. He's back home resting after a treatment yesterday, or he's really excited to go out and do this in a few months. You know, all these little things that are the same type of things you would tell your co-workers if your spouse was ill. I don't think we need to be told that last night Charles had an infusion of chemotherapy drugs and then throughout 4 hours. But these little updates like he's doing well but he's feeling a bit tired help. Whereas in Norway, Hakon gave his sort of impromptu question and answer session where he addressed that they're back in Norway, they're doing well, they're grateful to be home, this was an issue where they addressed that, they're going to make some changes. He kind of covered everything and then he moved on, rather than the palace having to release a statement that was like, we see that you have on the internet been speculating about why Harold was in Malaysia. It takes it from being like an official statement that can then be used against them to being a family member.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference. And I think you've always seen it be the difference, but that is the difference.
Absolutely agree. Couldn't agree more. I think the Scandinavian royals have a general cultural acceptance of the press in a way that the British don't. So what they do, and this happens at all sort of events for Scandinavian royals, it's not just when there's a big story like this, they'll have the press who follow them around, and then the royals will like stop and talk to the press. And usually what they say is not particularly earth shattering. It's just like, I'm really happy to be here in such and such today. They'll drop little anecdotes. So this is where you hear things like, oh, I was in the park yesterday with Prince Oscar picking up litter. And like, you know, they don't have to release a photograph that seems a bit show-offish. They don't have to tell you an official statement because that would be really random, but they can sort of drop it in and you get to feel like you're learning a little bit about them, but it's never more than they want to share. So they do these quite naturally, and that just doesn't happen in the UK, where like the Brits very, very rarely go up and talk to members of the British press. And when they do, it tends to be fairly confrontational. There's an example of Harry sort of snapping at a reporter who tried to ask him a question, Rhiannon, and or like it's the press just screaming questions, which obviously they're not going to get a very good response because they're shouting at somebody anyway. So that already raises the sort of tension as when you're shouting things at somebody across a room. And I think, as you say, the benefit of it is that you can send out a royal to kind of answer criticism without having to put it in an official statement. So it feels more natural. There's a difference between William like going up to the press and saying, actually, by the way, guys, Kate is completely fine and you should all tell everybody that, versus somebody just offhandedly saying, oh, how's the Princess of Wales today? And William could say, oh, she's good, thank you. She's really frustrated that she can't go out for her daily swim. So I think she's really itching to get back to normal because she loves that. Or, you know, that's something that it's like it's answering the questions and the concerns, but not in a way that feels too heavy-handed of like it doesn't feel petulant. It doesn't feel like they're worried about the conversations that are going on in social media. It makes it feel very natural and normal because it's coming from an individual.
I mean, after the Harry and Meghan Oprah interview, when the press were going to William and Kate, are you a racist family, sir? And William went, we are very much not a racist family. Like, that is very a great example of how not to do this, because it was too big a topic to cover in a sentence. You can't do it casually. William was clearly very angry. Like, you could see that in how he responded. Like, you know, that kind of, he wasn't shouting, but it's that frustration that, like, your parents get when you've done something wrong and they're really disappointed in you. And I almost feel like that's hovering in the background anytime the press asks them a question. Part of the reason some of the sort of rumours about Kate and Charles have spiraled to the extent is because William isn't giving those kind of, you know, he's not, when someone's going, oh, how's the Princess of Wales? He's giving the comments to a child at an engagement. And that's not necessarily getting into the public sphere.
And the response is just like, oh, she's doing really well, thanks. And that's it. There's no further detail.
Yeah, and you know, the British royals do that a lot. They give the information to the public in passing, and then the public, that doesn't, information doesn't always get into the wider sphere of the world unless you are hunting for conversations between Prince William and children at his recent engagement.
I think it's a great idea, and I do think it's something that actually could work that is inspired by the Scandinavian approach. It's just that it would need to be broader than just this conversation currently about health. It would need to be a wider shift in the way that the Brits interact with the press. Because I think that at the moment, the relationship between the British royals and the press is much poorer than it isn't between the Scandinavian royals and the press. There would need to be sort of an exert, you know, a conscious effort on both sides to build up that trust so that the Brits know that they aren't going to be sort of railroaded by a really, really, you know, a question that they couldn't possibly answer, or you know, something like that. But also that the royal sort of, I guess they need media training, really. It can't just feel like we're talking to the press because Charles is really ill. It needs to feel like a concerted effort to kind of involve the press a little bit more and to kind of know that you can trust them to ask questions that are relevant and that are fair.
I think it's also, some of it's the family dynamics, because in Norway they could throw a question at Håkon about Martha Louise, like in the middle of this Harald chat, they could just throw that in. But Håkon and Martha Louise still have a very good relationship, so
True.
he's not going to be thrown by someone asking him a question about his sister, and she's going to go, oh, I'm really happy for her. Whereas I think for the Brits, with Harry and Meghan and Andrew, there is so much raw emotion still there. Someone's going to ask them a question. You know, they'll go up and have their little impromptu chat about Charles's health, and someone will go, and how are you feeling about Harry, sir? And that's when the issues would come, because I don't think lots of people in the royal family are ready to just be thrown that, have that question thrown at them.
So, you know, we had the Queen, whose approach, as we discussed in our previous episodes, was wildly inconsistent, depending on what was going on and who was involved, and like the how she handled health issues was all over the map. And so Charles is really starting from scratch and trying to understand how he wants to share health information with the public. Whereas in Norway, Harald has had a lot of health issues in the past, and so has had a lot more time to kind of work out the system that works for him. So we thought we would look back at some of these significant health crises and discuss how they handled those.
So, way back in 2003, whole adult ago, King Harold was diagnosed with urinary bladder cancer, and then was off work for about 5 months. They essentially announced that on the announcements on the in very early December, and they announced that on the 25th of November, he had been diagnosed with bloods in his urine. He'd returned home, gone back in a few days later, then sent home again. Then they diagnosed him with the cancer. And on December the 8th, they were going to remove his bladder to tackle the cancer. There'd be no indication it had spread. He would be hospitalised for 2 to 3 weeks and then have a few months off. And they even gave a suspected hospital leaving date of December the 22nd within the first day's opening statement.
Yeah, it's actually quite similar because at the end of November 2003, Harold was hospitalised due to hematuria, which is blood in the urine. So at the time, he hadn't been diagnosed with cancer. He was hospitalised with something else first. He was visited by the family at the hospital, which is also a comforting thing because I think a lot of people are saying now, like, oh, well, the family are visiting him, so he must be on death's door. But 21 years ago, the family also visited him in hospital and he was fine. So, you know, it's all right. I do think it's interesting that they did tell you a lot, but they did also still hold things back. So I think that once you have your bladder removed, there are different options for how you kind of do what you need to do with the stuff that you know, like how all that works. I think there's different ways of ongoing management. And they didn't tell you like specifically what his onward treatment plan was. So there are still things that they kept back. And then in the week after his surgery, they said that they were going to give daily updates. But then about 3 days later, they said, actually, the doctors have decided that we don't need to do daily updates anymore, so we're not going to do them. And then after that, they only really gave updates about key things. So I think one of the difficulties right now is that actually, even though we're comparing, we are at different stages. So we're at the moment, we're sort of right in the midst of Harold's initial crisis, and it's possible that he'll need longer term off, but I don't expect that we will get, you know, we've already seen that the daily updates have stopped, so I don't expect that we're going to get daily updates throughout the entire time that he is sick. Whereas with Charles, actually, we did get quite frequent updates at the beginning, and it's only now that we're kind of settled in and he's going through treatment and there isn't anything substantial to say that they've kind of stopped giving those daily updates. So actually, I don't think the situations are as dissimilar as they might appear at first.
The thing that's most interesting to me is how much, despite this kind of facade of openness, is being held back all the time. And I think the Norwegian ones must do it really well, because you're not sitting there thinking, hang on, they've not told me this really key information. I mean, did you not know how much I Googled to find out whether or not Harold had a bladder? Well, does he still have a bladder? Where's it gone? And
where's it gone?
It's not there. Like, where is it? I mean, they might have just gone through the process of having it grow back, which is something they do, or he might have a stoma and they've just never mentioned it. And we don't know that. And, you know, I understand the argument, and I think it's right that we don't necessarily need to know that. It's not in my business.
No, not at all.
But it's no less, no more transparent than Buckingham Palace saying Charles is having treatment for cancer and you're seeing him go in for treatment once a week. And that's what they've told you. You know he's having treatment. We just don't know what the treatment is. And that's the same thing for Harold. We know the bladder was removed, but that's all we know.
The one thing that I think was quite different in this situation was that a few months after this situation, Harold did give some interviews. In that interview, he shared like really personal details about kind of how he felt when he called the doctor after he saw blood in his urine. Again, the difficulty is that we're a few months down the line with Harold when he started giving these things, whereas with Charles, this is still a relatively new situation. He's still in the midst of it. And I don't necessarily know if we'll see like a glossy magazine spread with Charles talking about how he felt when he was diagnosed with cancer in the future. But I do think that, you know, in a year's time or something like that, we might see Charles going to an event with cancer survivors and talking in that context about how he felt when he was diagnosed. So, you know, it's hard to judge at this point in time. So the next big health crisis that Harold had was in 2005. So in March, they held a press conference to state that the king would be having heart surgery. They said that it wasn't serious, that he'd been having trouble with his heart valves for a while, and that the operation would be after Easter, and then he would be on sick leave. And I think, again, this is interesting because you can already see that there's kind of slight inconsistencies because they did a full press conference. Also, we only got daily updates up until the 12th of April, even though he was off work until early June. So again, you can see that there was updates at the beginning, as you know, as the situation was unfolding, but there weren't daily updates after a certain point.
Sort of using these to look at what's happening now, it then makes me view it the daily updates in a slightly different way. Because I'm like, well, why were they giving me daily updates for 3 days when nothing happened when they were fast? So I'm thinking, well, what they must have in my head, I'm assuming that they knew there was going to be another change. Because otherwise, why would you keep going with your updates? At that point, you would go, we're just going to stop until he goes home. And that's probably not true, but it's this kind of inconsistency. Then I start going, well, why are they doing it this time, but not that time? Why was that a press conference, but not this one?
Yeah, and you see in this situation with the heart surgery as well, the same sort of thing of like they'll give you some information, but they don't give you everything. So they told us that he'd had his surgery, but actually something that they have consistently refused to tell us is where the new valve in his heart came from. And but they were asked, you know, it's not just a case where I'm going, oh, why didn't they tell us that? Like they were asked point blank by the press, where did this valve come from? And he wouldn't say. And I think Hakon has also refused to say in certain things. So I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, as we've said it. You know, in every health related episode we've ever done, royals are no, under no obligation to tell us every single thing all the time. It's just that there's it, you know, there are things that Harold clearly wants to be held back, and that is absolutely fine, but to act like there aren't is not true. He was briefly hospitalized a few times over the years, so 2017, 2018, and early 2020, and these things were generally like an unnamed infection that they didn't tell us what the infection was for, or he had a pain in his foot, or he was dizzy. He was dizzy, which is my favorite one. But then the next big surgery was in late 2020.
Yes, so in 2020, the palace released a statement. This was when about 2020?
October.
October 2020. They released a statement that said that Harold would need to undergo surgery this week or that week in the past now to replace the heart valve that he had replaced in 2005. So it had essentially worn out. And they said that it was not going to be open heart surgery and the king would be awake for the whole procedure. And this followed a slightly earlier mini news story that had happened in September. So in September, he had been shortness. He had been hospitalized due to a shortness of breath. He was sort of discharged, but they kept doing tests. So sort of very similar to Charles at the moment and Harold back in 2003 when he was hospitalized for another reason. They did tests, then found out sort of some further issue. And in this case, they said that changing the valve on his heart again would help with his breathing and it would sort of correct this initial problem as well. And then he was off for a period when Hakon was regent again.
I think I read the press release that they released at the time, and it was incredibly detailed, I will say that. So the fact that they told you that it wasn't going to be open heart surgery, it would be local anaesthetic, that it would be administered through his groin, which I was like, I don't know if I need to know that. I do, but again, I think this is a result of like, what is the purpose of this? Because in that situation, he'd had this health issue that was in September, and this was like a continuation of that. So it was kind of like all part of the same story. And he'd already had his heart valve replaced in 2005. So I think a lot of people like myself who don't know that much about medicine would have been like, oh my goodness, he's got to have it get replaced again. Is this a different valve? Is this the same valve? Like, this is really worrying. Is his heart failing? Like, I'm pretty sure the heart's important to, you know, life. So I think there would have been naturally a lot of concern. So they were trying to like immediately sort of say, you don't have to be worried. Most heart valves only last sort of 15 to 20 years. So it's actually perfectly normal.
Yeah, what I've noticed is how many times Harold gets hospitalized, goes home, and then has to then immediately release a statement because he's had something bigger going on. Like they should just stop releasing all the times he gets into hospital because it just looks like he's continuously being ill. When actually he's probably only been ill like fewer times, but it's been announced like three separate instances.
Well, this is why I think, again, as I say, it works in Norway, it's fine, but this is the downfall of doing the daily statements. It does make it feel like, oh, he's sick every 5 minutes, and this is really concerning, when in reality it might only be like he's only got like two big health issues, but it's just that they flare up every now and then, you know.
You stop telling us so much information,
Yeah,
guys.
yeah. So the next big health issue was in January 2021, so only a few months later. They announced that he was in hospital and that he would be having knee surgery the next day and then would be off for 2 weeks. So he was expected to come back on the 14th of February. And I think this is actually the best example of why this approach would not work in the UK. because on the 12th of February, so 2 days before he was supposed to come back, they released a new statement saying that he would be off for another month. Then on the 12th of March, 2 days before his extended period of leave was supposed to end, they said, oh no, actually, he's going to be off until the 11th of April. And so he did come back on the 11th of April, but that was 2 months later than they had originally said. And so I think this is a perfect exemplification of the risk of putting things in writing and saying, we're going to be back on this particular day. The level of interest in the British Royals means that there's more conspiracy theories and there's more sort of intense reactions to things. And I think if they told us Kate will be back in February, and then they'd had to extend it to March, and then they'd had to extend it to April, and then, you know, I think people would have, it would have been even worse than it currently is. And in the moment, it might feel less transparent, but actually, the benefit of it is that they're not telling you something that could very well change very easily. Because I do think that having it extended twice is quite serious. It would worry a lot of people here, I think.
Yeah, I'd like to know who looked at a, 80 something year old man and thought, yeah, you know what? He would definitely be able to have surgery and be up and about within 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know.
Like, that's I when I broke my foot, I was, how old was I when I broke my foot? 22, and I was on crutches for almost 3 months. And I like to assume I'm somewhat slightly fitter than a 80 something year old ex-smoker.
I
So
don't. I'm not.
I have the assumption that I've got, I mean, I have no upper body strength, which was possibly my issue, but I was struggling for a long time. I would always sort of err on the side of caution and extend it a bit and say, like, you know what? He's going to be off for at least a month, if not, like, at least a month.
Yeah, because then if you see them or before that, then they can sell it as like, oh no, their recovery is just so much better than expected. It's that kind of under promise, over deliver.
Royals really need to get on board with because they are very much of a over promise and under deliver type vibe.
That's Royals in a nutshell.
Then we have just a few other minor incidents. So we know that Harold had COVID in March 22, mild symptoms. He was hospitalized with a fever in August in 2022, then in December in the same year with an infection, then May in 2023 with an infection. And then in October in 2023, he had COVID again. And then all the way up to January this year when he had his respiratory infection. What's notable is that it's so inconsistent. Like you said, like we know what some of the infections were, but not others. We had so much more information than some than others. For some of these illnesses, he was off for a couple of weeks. For some, it was literally days. Sometimes he got extended again and again and again. I think for some of the sort of shorter infection, they were like, oh, he'll be off for 2 days. And it's like, actually, Hakon's going to be a regent for 2 weeks.
Well, actually, just in January, the infection he had in January, they had to extend his sick leave. So this is something that happened recently, and I think they'll probably have to do it again because they said he'll be back by the 16th, and I don't think that's going to happen.
No way. I mean, and even if he has the operation on the 11th and he's perfectly well and recovers and goes home on the 12th, I can't see him being back to work after having. I mean, even when you are ill, it exhausts you. And he's been ill for
In
nearly
another
3 weeks by
country
that
as
point.
well.
Yeah, he's had to travel. It's been a stressful time for him. And like within that, there's differences. Like you said, there was the dizziness and there's the fever and there's the infection. But because then I'm not saying I need to know an exact official diagnosis for all of these things, but I don't know what's the difference. So if Harold gets hospitalized for a fever, is that worse than an infection or better? Or, so I don't know how to judge them as issues in my head. I'm getting very used to him being off on sick leave.
There is a, I think there's an argument that transparency is great and that the Norwegian approach is great. And there's also an argument that we don't necessarily need to know that the monarch has got a cold and is going to be out for the week, because would they be doing that much in that week anyway? You know, if it's not going to impact, if they're not cancelling anything, do we need to know that? Does it just build up a picture that this person is really fragile? And are we, you know, is it in reality, is maybe Harold not actually as ill as any other 87-year-old, but it just feels like he is because we hear so many health crises from him. I think there are positives and negatives to both sides, and it's overly simplistic to act like telling us more information is always good. I think it can confuse things. I think it can lead you into a trap where you have to backtrack or lie. And I think sometimes there is a merit to like just being quiet until you know for definite.
Camilla and Mette-Marit for years were getting sort of flack for not traveling abroad as much. And then Metamaric came out and was like, yes, I have this chronic life-limiting condition. And Camilla was like, even, you know, even then she was like, well, actually, I've got this horrible phobia of flying and I get vertigo. And people go, like, oh, I understand it. To, you know, that's suddenly, that's an example of giving that transparency and people sort of accepting it. But then you get in the same breath, Camilla, around the coronation, missed a bunch of events and they didn't say why. Mm-hmm. She was never like officially scheduled to be at them. They didn't announce a list of attending royals. We just kind of assumed she would be there as the queen who was being coronated. But she wasn't at some of them. And then there was no announcement of where she was. She might have just been at home. But people were like, oh, she's got a bad back. She's got this. She's got that. Because, and I think you can see sometimes the transparency is a really, really good thing. Because if the transparency isn't there, people are assuming that, people assume the worst of you all the time, particularly royals. And you have to give, sometimes you do have to tell people why for them to go, oh, sorry, that was on us. We did very much assume something that's not fair. But then at the same time, you then, which clearly no royal family can do, have to apply a level of consistency to it because people are continuously being like, well, what's wrong? You know, I've even seen it, you know, like I remember when royals have had to take, you know, they've had to cancel an engagement for a, you know, a family emergency or childcare issues. And people go, someone's seriously ill. And that they're being transparent. They are telling you why they're not there. Like, you can't be there. The nanny's sick. But people are still assuming. But Charles has cancer. It's not got an end date. We don't know how long it's going to go for. And I think there are a lot of misconceptions about cancer that possibly do need to be addressed, because I'm seeing a lot of weird comments where we've been like, well, they said he would not be with the public, but that doesn't mean he can't go to the Commonwealth Day service. That's not the public. That's public, guys. It's outside. But at the same time, if they are giving you constant updates on when he's having chemotherapy or radiotherapy or pills or whatever it is he's doing for treatment, you are likely to be getting the same statement every week for a year, if not longer, with no change. And that's going to irritate the, what is it, 70 million people in Britain, plus the 14 other countries Charles is the head of state of. And also all the statements about Charles are going to go global, whereas the statements about Harold are very much Norway locked.
You need to feel like there's a reason for why you're telling people this, as opposed to just the only purpose being to tell people. You can see in the Norwegian approach that sometimes transparency like this is great, but there are pitfalls to it, and I just don't think that you can say because it works in Norway it's going to work over here. So that would be my general summary. So thank you for joining us for this episode this week. We're using the sort of power that this podcast has. You know, we've had our record, we killed the queen, we probably caused my greatest abdication, I'm pretty sure we did. So if this podcast does have any sort of cosmic power, we'll use all of it to send our good wishes to Harold and hope that he gets better, because he is our favorite little boy. We are hoping to take a break next week, so we won't have an episode, but we will be back the week after. And please do send us suggestions for our 100th episode. We're looking to do something special, but we don't know what. But other than that, it is a goodbye from me
and goodbye from me.